Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 4th of January. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the Social Media Desk.
Coming up, political uncertainty looms in Gambia, but the opposition maintains it will take over come January 19th.
The incoming government, the incoming president, is meeting the population. They are coming in droves to his office. They are fixing appointments.
Wolfgang Ischinger, chair of Munich Security Conference, speaks about Europe's security challenge.
Yes, we haven't done enough in the past. And of course, it is true that many citizens, not only in this country, in Germany, but around Europe, have become frustrated.
And we have the first If Africa hashtag that's trending today.
But before we get there, here is a chance to hear what is happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. The trial has begun in the German capital Berlin of a 19-year-old Syrian asylum seeker who is charged with fighting for the jihadist group Islamic State in his home country. He is also charged with recruiting at least one new member for the group and offering himself as a contact for extremists planning to carry out an attack here in Germany. The trial comes just weeks after an Islamic State extremist from Tunisia killed 12 in an attack on a Berlin Christmas market. A top UN official has said that thousands of people are starting to return to formerly rebel-held East Aleppo, despite the destruction and the freezing weather. Sayed Malik, country representative for Syria at the UN Refugee Agency, said 2,200 families had returned to the Hanano housing district over the last couple of days. But given the appalling conditions, the UN was not encouraging people to return. Turkey says it has identified the attacker in the Istanbul nightclub massacre on New Year's Day, but has not provided any details. The attacker is believed to have been based in the central Turkish city of Konya before carrying out the raid in which 39 people were killed. Meanwhile, Turkish police have been detaining suspects, as DW's Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
As many as 40 people are being now reported to have been detained, all of them in the western city of Izmir. They are believed to be people that knew the attacker, family connections. Many of them are believed to have been living in Konya and fled after the attack to Izmir, where security forces have now detained them.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Britain's outgoing ambassador to the European Union, Ivan Rogers, has criticised strongly Prime Minister Theresa May's government over its approach to the Brexit negotiations. He said the British government had been hindered by muddled thinking. Rogers, who had earlier warned that it could take 10 years for Britain to conclude a new trade deal with the EU, resigned unexpectedly on Tuesday. Pro-Brexit lawmakers in Britain said it was right that Rogers should step aside. EU Commission spokeswoman Natasha Berthaud said he would be missed.
We regret the loss of a very professional, very knowledgeable, while not always easy, interlocutor and diplomat who always loyally defended the interests of his government.
Gambia's army chief has reaffirmed his loyalty to embattled President Yahya Jammeh in the face of a possible regional military intervention to enforce the result of an election that surprisingly ended in Jammeh's defeat. In a letter published in a pro-government newspaper, General Usman Bajia assured Jammeh of the unflinching loyalty and support of the Gambia Armed Forces. For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
This is DW's Africa Link program, broadcasting from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
Now, Adama Barrow is Gambia's president-elect. He won the December 1st presidential elections and President Yahya Jammeh conceded defeat but later rejected the results. Efforts by the regional group ECOWAS to persuade Jammeh to leave office have not been successful. Since then, media freedom has come under attack and some 3 radio stations have been closed, and now the head of the Electoral Commission has fled the country. Both the United Nations and the African leaders have called for him to step down, but he just won't. I've been speaking to Khalifa Sala, spokesperson for the opposition coalition in the Gambia, and I started by asking him what he makes of these developments.
I have emphasized that what is happening in the country is something that has never happened in Gambian history. We have an incoming government and an outgoing government. At the moment, the incoming government, the incoming president, is meeting the population. They are coming in droves to his office. They are fixing appointments. They are working in preparation for his inauguration on the 19th of January 2017. In the interim, the outgoing government is also filing, or has in fact filed, a case in court. And I'm sure they are waiting for that court to proceed.
Well, we know that probably the determining day will be 10th of January when the court will pass its judgment. But in the meantime, we've learned that the army head, the army chief actually spoke to the current president and he said they are loyal to him. They will continue to protect him. What do you make of this position taken by the army?
Well, all those are speculation. What is very clear at the moment is that the incoming government has told all Gambians that the outgoing government has a mandate of 5 years, and outgoing President Jammeh is still the president of the republic, and one does not expect the security forces to simply go there and say, let them remove him from office. That will constitute a coup d'etat. What is anticipated is for them to fraternize with the population and wait for the 19th.
Mr. Sala, you're absolutely right. The people of Gambia want peace, but that doesn't seem to be the case, as in that doesn't look like that's what President Yahya believes, because he's maintained he's not leaving power. What are you going to do?
Well, he has freedom of speech. At the moment, he is backed by the Constitution because he's in office. But on the 19th, he will not be backed by the Constitution, and we believe all institutions will be transferred to be under the President-elect Barrow, and he will stand alone. I don't know what he will say at that time, but I don't think he will reasonably be able to say, I am going to stay in power.
I was speaking to Khalifa Sala, spokesperson for the opposition coalition in the Gambia. And Wanjiku, you have something to say?
Yes. Martin Woodnam says the African dictators just hate democracy. Well, we also have another comment from Omar Said Omaro, who says that these African leaders are not serious.
We'll get back to that later. But first, on 19th December 2016, 12 people were killed in what has come to be known as the Berlin attack. On New Year's Eve, another 39 were killed in a club in Istanbul. Now, these are just 2 of the many attacks in different parts of Europe. Whereas we hope for the best, one thing is certain: terrorism is still a huge challenge in Europe. Many critics think Europe is not doing enough to guarantee its citizens' safety. Is that so? DW's Sumi Samaskanda put that question to Wolfgang Ischinger, chair of the Munich Security Conference. Take a listen.
Yes, we haven't done enough in the past. And of course, it is true that many citizens, not only in this country, in Germany, but around Europe, have become frustrated with efforts by the European Union to provide more security. At the same time, this is why this is also an opportunity. If the EU can get their act together and do more to make sure that both external security and domestic homeland security are guaranteed, I think the acceptance of the European Union as a project, as an idea, could again be revitalized. So there's an opportunity, and we need to do more, as the German Homeland Security Minister has tried just overnight to come up with some ideas to stimulate the debate.
Mr. Ischinger, there has been a lot of criticism of security services, particularly in Germany, after this latest attack that happened at the Christmas market. Did they make a mistake here, and did they let a suspect slip through the net?
Well, I mean, clearly there's room for improvement. Germany happens to be a federal state. We have responsibilities distributed among more than a dozen, lender institutions. That doesn't necessarily create the most efficient system. So the question, what can be done to maximize internal coordination, but also what needs to be done to maximize EU-wide coordination? It is not acceptable, at least as seen by most citizens in the EU, it's not acceptable that we have huge numbers of foreigners coming in. And I'm among those who believe that it's a great idea to welcome, refugees from desperate situations like Syria. But at the same time, we need to make sure that we know who is coming in, and we need to be able to follow these people as they go from, let's say, Italy to France, mm-hmm. to Germany to Belgium, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, I belong to those who believe that what we really need in the EU is some kind of a European FBI, an EU-wide police operation that can actually catch a criminal, even as he crosses borders.
DW's Sumi Somaskanda speaking to Wolfgang Ischinger, chair of the Munich Security Conference. In Mozambique, things are currently looking good. The head of the opposition movement, Afanso Lacama, announced that a ceasefire declared 2 weeks ago will be extended for 2 months to allow peace talks to continue in what he called a favorable environment. Now, this is some good news considering that talks between the government and the opposition, Renamo movement, have been hurt by attacks on officials from both camps. Let's hear a bit more about that from Zipporah Njeri Nyambura.
Afonso Lacama, head of Mozambique's main opposition group Renamo, says he spoke by phone with President Filipe Nyusi and agreed to extend the ceasefire up to the 4th of March this year. The ceasefire has brought a relative calm to Mozambique's main transport routes. In the past, Renamo frequently attacked government convoys and civilian vehicles, while the government soldiers were accused of targeting suspected rebels in nearby villages. Renamo leader Lacama, who is currently in hiding in central Mozambique, said that the truce would allow time for negotiations between the opposition and the governing Frelimo party.
The truce extension for 60 days is intended to build an atmosphere conducive to advancing talks in Maputo in peace and tranquility for both sides, the Renamo and the Mozambican government, and on the other hand, to offer peace to the Mozambicans.
Mozambican analyst Amido Chavana says the truce is welcome, but the country needs effective and lasting peace.
We've been waiting a long time for this step. The war has done a lot of harm to this country, but the country needs solid and consistent solutions. These small truces should be more than just punctual political moves. They need to be a global and more serious perspective aimed at the resolution of this conflict.
The talks brokered by international mediators have been going on for some time after the opposition claimed the 2014 general elections won by the ruling party were a fraud. They now want a bigger role in the government as well as a right to govern the areas it dominates. Human rights groups believe that more than 15,000 people have been forced to flee the fighting between the Renamo opposition fighters and the ruling Frelimo government.
Zipporah Njeri Nyambura with that report. Back to you, Anjiku.
Yes, indeed. And starting with comments from that report, we have Emmanuel Vincent who says, congratulations to the leaders in Mozambique for ending the conflict. Kanumba Balagomwa says, that is a good thing that the Mozambican government has done. We congratulate them for that. We also have another comment from Isaiah Sambo who says, congratulations to Mozambique. Indeed, dialogue is the best weapon.
Dialogue is the best weapon. Okay, go ahead.
We also have, on a different topic, Janet Jackson just gave birth at age 50. And this, of course, has got lots of comments. We have one from Henry Kel Luye, who says somebody was posting that people should not be in a hurry to marry and have kids now that Janet Jackson did it at 50.
Has she already given birth?
Yes, she did yesterday.
A baby?
A baby boy. Her first.
Congratulations to her. And we leave it at that, Wanjiku, and get back to that a little later.
You're still listening to DW Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
Still to come, hoping against hope, Burkinabis worry about their ailing economy.
My name is Fati. There's no business here and life has changed a lot. There's no money around anymore. And why? Because there are too many strikes and things like that.
We also have the first African trending topic of the year.
But first, now, if you were planning to export cars to Nigeria via land, then you might think twice, for you might just be headed for a loss. The Nigerian government put ban on the importation of vehicles into the country through its land borders has kicked off. Most of the vehicles imported through Nigeria's land borders end up in the commercial capital, Lagos. As Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos, scores of vehicles meant for importation through Nigeria's land borders with the Republic of Benin are trapped at the border.
Most vehicles imported through Nigeria's land borders end up in a car shop like this, where water is first sprinkled on them as the dust from the road is washed off. Many of the vehicles have made the long overland journey from neighboring Republic of Benin to Lagos. Even though there is a seaport in Lagos, many car dealers prefer to bring their vehicles through the land borders because they consider it a cheaper option. Up to now, custom controls at the land borders have been known to be less strict and easier to bypass than at the port. Car dealers say prices of vehicles will rise if they can no longer come in from the land borders. Car dealer Omokol fears that this will affect his business.
An increase in the price will definitely reduce the influx of customers. Definitely, who will buy? Nobody will buy vehicle again. And it will affect with the dealers. That is just it. When the price is high, and we are directly pushing out of business. But that's where I get my money to feed my family. And if I'm pushed out of business, then I have to dust my certificate. Where is the job?
The Association of Motor Dealers of Nigeria, a group whose members sell imported vehicles, say about 2 million jobs will be affected by the ban. Besides car dealers, there are other people who make a living from vehicles imported through the land borders. This include mechanics like Adebayo Kende. At his Lagos workshop, Kende works on the wheels of a car. The vehicles are often driven through rough roads and bush paths. Most cars are second-hand vehicles from Europe, and although the dealers do not admit it, some are smuggled into the country through back roads. When they arrive, they are badly damaged. Mechanics like Kende make a living fixing the damages. He says the ban will affect his livelihood.
Being a mechanic, we don't have another job. This is our job. This is our work. From there, we feed our family. So this is the only means we have for now. So if government can assist us, they should just pardon for some. At least they should give us like 2 more years before they can cancel it.
Panel beaters and spray painters also make a living working on second-hand cars before they are put up for sale. They too will be affected by the ban. In the meantime, vehicles are piling up at the border after missing the January 1 deadline. The Customs Service says the vehicles will not be allowed to enter the country. Jerry Atta, Customs spokesman in Lagos, says the ban will be enforced strictly.
We are up to our games. We have what it takes to deliver on our mandate. So what we have decided, we have patrol teams all over. We have checkpoints all over. We also have surveillance teams who are also trying to make sure that we implement these policies to the latter and to ensure that these vehicles, either new or small good vehicles, does not come through the land border.
Although the government did not give any reason for the ban, it is believed that the move is a bid to stop revenue loss from large-scale smuggling. With the start of the new year, Nigeria's finance ministry also slammed a higher import duty on cars and other foreign goods.
A report from Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
On the spot.
It's just been over a year since the inauguration of Burkina Faso 8th President Rachmal Christian Kabore. You would think that after a popular uprising in 2014, a failed coup in 2015, and a major terrorist attack in 2016, calmer times would be welcome. Correct. Except for one place, the economy. It's underperforming, and that usually spells trouble, as Brampos Humas has been finding out.
Peuple de Burkina Faso, chers compatriotes, l'année 2016...
That's President Kabore's New Year message to the people of Burkina Faso. He talks about national security, government reform, and is very upbeat about the nation's economy. Really, of course, the best place to catch the mood of the people when discussing the economy is the market.
My name is Fatih. There's no business here, and life has changed a lot. There's no money around anymore, and why? Because there are too many strikes and things like that.
I'm Awa Owedrogo. There's no peace in this country, and our brothers are killing each other. We're not happy about that.
References there to the many strikes that have plagued the country in 2016, and to the many attacks near the border with Mali. Even as President Kabore pronounced his New Year address, gunmen struck again in Djibo, less than 200 kilometers to the north of the capital, killing one. But is the market women's somber assessment of the economy correct? Here's journalist Karim Gadiaga of the country's leading economy weekly.
Yes, absolutely. Ever since the popular uprising of October 2014, we have been in this lethargic phase. Investors are holding back. We import less than we used to. We don't feel that we are living in a dynamic economy. We are still waiting.
The longer the economy stands still, the higher the chance that people will revolt again. The threat of instability has investors running for the hills. Here's Karim Gadiaga again.
There is lack of confidence. Our own business people have adopted a wait-and-see attitude. And then there are the banks. They don't want to finance any activity.
And finally, there's the attitude of President Kabore's government. This is how Gadiaga sees it.
We are waiting for a clear message from the government telling us where it wants to take our economy. But we have the impression that the authorities haven't yet found that road.
Agriculture, some investment in processing industries. This country produces more than enough goods that can feed the market. It can fulfill that famous slogan by its slain former president Thomas Sankara, consume what you produce. Instead, we have a ruling class that goes shopping in Paris while attending a donor conference. Last December, those donors pledged a staggering 24 billion euros for Burkina Faso's latest economic development plan. The market women have never heard about the plan, and they don't want pledges, they want money.
We come here every day, but we're selling nothing. Our good clients have all left us. We hope the government will be able to help us so we can at least feed ourselves. We'd be happy if business returned, but for now, there's very little.
Bram Posthumus with that very interesting piece on Burkina Faso's economy.
Living Planet Africa.
Africa is one of the most vulnerable continents to climate change. Scientists predict an increase in the occurrence of longer, hotter, and more frequent heat waves, which could have a strong impact on human mortality and crop production. But that's not all. It may also propel transfer of diseases from animals to humans. Mogode Gorgias is a researcher at Soikoni University of Agriculture in Morogoro, Tanzania. He's been telling me about how serious the problem could be.
There are a lot of changes regarding with every temperature which we used to have. We see a consistent increase in the unusual rain pattern is very evident.
You say there are changes, certainly, we know that. But how serious could the problem turn out to be?
When there are changes in patterns, like in the living condition, which these animals are used to, they will start looking for alternative, for a better place that can be convenient for them. We have diseases which are transmitted from animals to humans. If we refer to areas where there's an interface between the wildlife and the human, and these human keep animals which interact with wild animals, these animals will always meet in the water points. And as the competition for water increases, so it increases also the interaction for those resources. So we expect that diseases which are transmitted from these animals are likely to be also increasing in humans.
Now, whereas you as scientists are certainly doing your job, tell me from the government side, what steps are being undertaken to get prepared for any outcome that could arise from this?
We see a lot of efforts from the government. Different institutions, government organs are engaged with the increasing awareness about the effect that can happen. And we see a lot of training now are being given, for example, to public health personnel on diseases which are emerging. There are also initiatives to build the capacity to manage diseases. The government is offering also some funding for local scientists to come up with innovative things which can help overcome consequences expected to occur from these changes.
Now, Doctor, we hear that heat waves could also force animals in Tanzania to enter people's homes in search for shelter. Now, how possible is this and what can be done to prevent this occurrence?
It is possible. Let's look at other disease vectors, which when they found like their normal habitat, the temperature is unusual, they will look for alternative. And the human being, we are capable of creating the conducive environment. Plant trees, our houses are much cooler than the outside environment. So these insects can move into our habitat. I think what needs to be done to prevent this is to increase efforts, not by one organ, but the general public to understand that we all need to participate in preventing this. If we stop environmental degradation, for example, deforestation, then the habitat for these animals will be intact. They won't look for alternatives.
I was speaking to Mugodi Gujas of Soikoni University of Agriculture in Morogoro, Tanzania. And now, Wanjiku, you want to tell us more about Janet Jackson?
Yes, indeed. Like we mentioned before, lots of people have been sending congratulatory messages from across the world. But we've also seen some mixed reactions to the great news that Janet Jackson, the American music idol, has given birth.
Great news, you say?
Well, at 50, I think it must be great news.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go on.
We have Tony Omokole who says, "Congratulations, Janet Jackson, for giving birth to a baby boy, even at 50. And we also have another comment from one Imanu who says, "So Janet Jackson gave birth at age 50. All biology teachers can appeal this development before we demand our fees back." Of course, if you did choose biology in high school, then you must have been told that after a certain age, a woman can have difficulties in giving birth.
We won't be dwelling so much on Janet Jackson. Something else, Peter, please.
Yes. We move all the way to Nigeria, where we have reactions on the report that we ran earlier on the implementation of a ban of cars imported by land.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Oluwatosin Gebela, who says, "What's the concrete effort to revive the industries? I haven't seen a genuine one, but we are always in a hurry to ban. Welcome to Nigeria."
I think the government is doing something. I mean, we all know that Nigeria is having economic troubles, and if people are going to be doing things behind the door, maybe that's the reason. They basically want to make sure people are importing, I mean, through the formal means and are able to pay taxes. Anyway, go on.
Yes, indeed. And The Watch, someone who calls himself The Watch 365, says, "I support the ban. Think big picture, not small picture. Car importation is not why Nigeria is here. Manufacture your own." But more also from Lawal Garba, who says, "That's good. It will force us to look inwards. After all, what concerns the common man with SUVs or foreign rice?" And have you seen the trending topic, If Africa Threw a New Year's Party? Jen, you should definitely check it out.
I'll do that right away after the show. But that, for now, we leave it at that. And we thank you to all our listeners for tuning on to DW Africa Link program. We will be back tomorrow, same time. For more news, do visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
Or follow us on DW Africa Facebook page with your comments on the stories posted. From me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
And me, Jen Ayeka Kumet. Have a wonderful day.